Welcome back to the Grim Reader podcast, a podcast where we judge a book by its front cover and then do a little book review. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Nikki.
And I'm really proud of ourselves for introducing it first and not forgetting like usual.
Yeah. Also, it's 9 a.m., lads. It's too early.
Well, it's actually 10 to 10 now, so I mean.
Oh, on a Sunday. Jesus.
Dedication,
Yeah.
even though we haven't recorded in weeks.
Yeah, dedication. We lost that word a long time ago.
I'd say we're still dedicated. It's just work has gotten in the way. Like,
Yes.
we've both been incredibly busy. And I mean, we talk about it a lot, so we're just both very busy.
We do. All
And
you need to know is it's just as busy. Oh,
I'd say for me, you see, my teaching's over, so I'm just doing admin work now, and it's fine.
yeah.
It's fine.
Not for
Whereas
me.
you, yeah.
We're writing songs of love, but not for me.
But
Oh no, I'm exhausted, but I've got a holiday coming up and it's my first sun holiday in 8 years. Woo woo woo. I was
can't.
like, will I dox myself and say I'm going to Portugal? But Portugal's a very big place, and so is the fact that I said I'm going without a specific date. So I don't think it counts as
What do you think is
doxing.
going to happen that any listeners that we might have are going to be like, she's going to Portugal. Oh my God.
I can't do, if one person asks me a single question on that holiday, they're getting ignored. Like, I just plan on sitting there. The
Okay.
end. I just need to sit there. So I don't want anyone asking me one question. If it's, I like your podcast, that's a question.
Okay. Well,
Not that anyone's ever going to bother, but.
Let's not just say to people like, okay, if you message me and tell me that you like my podcast, I'm not going to respond. I'm going to be
No,
like,
if you message me, that's okay. If you say it to my face in Portugal, that's not okay. You're not, I didn't hear you.
Who are you
I'm
going to be
on
meeting that you
holiday.
know?
Girl, I'm a celebrity.
I'm
Convinced.
so confused by what you're
I
trying to talk about.
know, can we edit it out?
My God, no, it sounds utterly cracked. I'm leaving it in. It
I
sounds like utter madness. Oh
tired.
my
Yeah.
God. I didn't think it happened so early in the episode that I could roast you.
Oh no, I'm
My God.
so fucking tired.
Portugal will be lovely though.
I
So it
my
will.
soul needs it.
If you're
My soul
going.
also needs to learn some Portuguese because I'm not walking in being like, "Hola, ¿cómo estás?"
Yeah, they'll be pretty insulted. Yeah, if you speak Spanish there, yeah,
Yeah.
I'm sure. But no, because Mateo was in Porto recently and he went to their famous bookshop and it was beautiful.
Oh,
Absolutely
oh
beautiful.
God.
And I was like, right, you're taking me there. Thank you.
I go
Just
there
for
now. Thank you.
the bookshop. Thank you. Oh, he like to say I feel so sorry for that lovely man with the amount of crap he has to put up with when I have to go into a bookshop.
It's like, what, remember that really old tweet? And it was like, oh, you bring your introvert friend to the bookshop, you lose them immediately. That's
Exactly.
Becca. Becca's
That's me.
gone.
I'm gone. Like, good
Becca's
luck.
dug a hole in the shelves and she's not leaving
Oh,
the Latin
like,
or the fiction section for a couple of months.
girl, like when we went to Shakespeare and Co., like, Mateo was just like, okay, I can't even sit down anywhere. I was there. Oh, I'd say I was inside for like a good 40 minutes, like at least. It all
So
just had me
good.
budge. Good look around, and I was like, "I'm so happy this boy loves me because I think that's the only reason he puts up with this." Oh, but yes, always a bit of Matteo appreciation at the moment.
Always, we love that boy.
We love that boy. We love that boy a lot.
Yeah.
But and he doesn't listen to this podcast, so he'll never know that.
That's his punishment for not listening.
Yeah.
He won't hear his praise.
I love how I'm like I'd never tell him I love him in person.
And meanwhile, like poor Emmett's plight is he has to put up with, I love you. I love you so much. I love you. I love you so much,
why does
Miss
that
Emmett.
sound like you're talking to like a baby or a
Yeah,
dog?
this is what he puts up with.
Oh my
I
God.
shower him with love the way I would a newborn child.
And Maybe it's because of that why somebody ordered him a glass of milk at his birthday dinner.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Maybe
the
that's
baby
the
boy.
Baby boy. But yeah, my news. This is kind of like a Grim Reader revisits one of our books, but a book that Nikki covered really long time ago.
Yeah, probably last summer.
Yeah, Sunset by Jessie Cave. I asked for it for Christmas. And at the moment, I've been trying to work my way through a lot of my Nick Alley books because, you know, if you didn't know, I'm a big book lover and I request everything that I see. So anyway, any physical books I have, I've kind of have been able to get into them. But anyway, home for a weekend and I saw Sunset there because I had left it at home. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to start reading this one. I really want to. Oh my God. 10 out of 10. Like more than 10 out of 10. 5 stars. It was utterly beautiful. Like absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating. And I would say, you know, trigger warnings.
Oh, everywhere. It's very, very upsetting.
It's very upsetting. Like there's death, there's grief. You know, it's someone just going through like the worst possible moment in their lives. But it was so beautiful still, though. There were so many beautiful, beautiful moments. And again, when I love a book, I'd never do it justice. But I think out of 2022, out of all the books I've read, this is the only 5-star I've given a book.
Oh, yeah. Becca, you poor thing.
I'm getting a bit more picky.
Oh, I'm getting a bit more picky. I've just found a couple of really good ones and they've all hit in a row. But I've been kind of going back through the archive of books that you've already told me are 5 stars. Maybe that's why. Yeah.
Oh, what ones have you read that I've told you about?
Well, I finally read Rachel's Holiday. That was one of my best books of the year.
Chloe did that one. That was my famous like happy story where I said the girl was going to Croatia.
Oh yeah, she was doing Mamma Mia. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember what else I've read right now. I have like a notes thing. Well, I read Young Mungo.
Oh.
I read Crying in H-Mart, which hasn't been done by us, but probably will be soon. Mm. Spoiler, it's 5 stars. I think everyone knows that book is 5 stars. It's so brilliant. What else have I been reading? I don't know, just lots of lovely things.
Well, the fact you read Young Mungo, I'm like, yeah. Actually, when did I read Young Mungo? It could have been last year.
I think it was January, so it would be this year.
All right, so I lied. 2, 10 star. 10 star, not even 5 star. 10 star.
Oh, and this other, I read another book as well that I won't say the name, but there is another like new book that came out this year that is like, when I read it, I thought it was 4, and then I think it's 5 now. So I will cover that soon as well.
Okay. Spider. I love how you're not, why are you not telling us the name?
Because I'll probably do it.
But then I'll make it a mission not to read it.
Okay, it's Cleopatra and Frankenstein.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Oh, God, I loved that book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've stayed away from that book anyway because you told me not to do it. So,
yeah.
Yes, this is what we have to do now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's more Nikki tells me not to read these books and then I'm like, well, aren't we lucky that I didn't pick that up the other day when I was looking at it? Story of my life.
Will we jump in?
We will.
I think it's my turn.
I think it's your turn first as well.
Okay, I gotta send you a photo.
Okay. Right.
Okay, Becca, there's no doubt you've seen this book.
Hmm.
This is The Secret History by Donna Tartt. Hold the applause.
I love how I'd actually forgotten what book you were doing.
Oh, but this book is everywhere. This is all over Book Talk. You look at a YouTuber, reader, kind of book reviewer, it's on their shelf. This is absolutely unavoidable. I can't believe we're only doing it now.
I mean, this is one that I know has come up on my recommended reading list a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, a lot. and it's one I don't know why I've never picked it up.
It's very long.
It's in her book. She also has The Goldfinch.
Yes, that's next on my to be read.
Apparently people love. I remember when the film came out, I didn't see the film, and they were like, this is so disappointing, it doesn't live up to the book. And I think as a book lover, when your favorite books are turned into movies, it's very hard.
Oh, it's very difficult. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Goldfinch, the movie's meant to be shocking. I'm really excited to read the book, but like Donna Tartt is just like, she's already like, I'm seeing this before I even review, because it's just fact. Like, she is a modern legend. Okay. Like, she is adored.
No, I mean, I know her fans are very, like, they love her work.
Oh, so. Yeah. Like, which I'm a little bit nervous of doing, like, I was nervous of reading this and doing it, because I knew whatever if I had anything negative to say, I was kind of like, oh,
okay,
I'm going to be fighting for my life out here.
Yes. But no, it's a chunky boy though, this book.
It's 617 pages, I think.
Chunky, right.
It's pretty big.
So I am looking at The Secret History by Donna Tartt. And there's not much to go on the cover of this book.
There's not.
It is literally a black cover. The writing is in nice, big, bold, massive writing, in grey. There's a review from The Times. Haunting, compelling, and brilliant. I can see that it's a Penguin book. Mm-hmm. Lovely. That's the only bit of colour in it. And then in the centre of the book is a gold coin. And from the looks of it, it looks like it could be... It's the coin is of someone with a dagger on top of a horse.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So, it kind of looks like a deer.
Oh, okay. You see, I can't really see that close.
Yeah, I can barely see as well.
But she's the one with the fiscal book in her hands. Like,
oh yeah, my. I'm like squinting.
But okay, it's leading me to believe it's either... Because, I mean, it's the secret history, so I'm going to guess either, like, something about early Greece or early Rome. And I'm going to go with Greece. Even though Matea's going to be like, oh, my God, disgusting. Why am I doing you?
Disgusting.
Why didn't you go for Rome? So, okay, the secret history. And I know this is wrong. I know this is wrong, my guess. But as soon as I saw the secret history, I don't know what this book's about. Spoilers alert. Yes. Don't give out to me. I saw The Secret History and the first thing that popped into my mind, because the gold coin in it as well, was National Treasure.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
And for anyone who doesn't know, National Treasure. National Treasure? I think that's our title. National Treasure is an amazing movie with Nicolas Cage.
It's not. It's shocking. Oh
my, girl, no. I stand those movies. I love those movies.
No, look, I'll describe National Treasure in one sentence. You walk into CEX, it's there a lot of times. Like, there's a shelf of National Treasure. Like, everyone owned the DVD. DVD.
I think this is going to be our first proper, like, argument. I can't.
Yeah. I'm prepared. I'll go to war if it's Nicolas Cage. I'll go to war.
Look, I don't really like Nicolas Cage. But by God, that movie, like... I don't know what it is about the movie. I'm just like, yeah. So we're in for wild times now, because that's what I'm going with.
Oh, so, Jesus.
Right, so how to make it about National Treasure. Okay, so what I'm going to say is we're going to meet our protagonist. And I'm going to say...
You got it right! There's a protagonist!
Thank you. Everything else is wrong. And I'm going to say that our protagonist is a recently graduated history buff, kind of archaeology history, but he's really into, obviously, if he's an archaeologist, like early times, especially early Greece. And there is this really famed, eccentric historian in who's based in Greece that he really wants to work with. And everyone, like, when he's asked at his graduation party, like, oh, like, what's your plans? Because, I mean, his lectures, I think we kind of see that they have really high hopes for him. They're like, oh, he's going to do amazing. He's like, actually, I really want to work with this guy. And they are disappointed. They try to persuade him out of it. They're like, look, he's a crackpot. You don't want to be working for this man. And he's like, no, I think, you know, I think he's a bit misunderstood. Let's say, you know, he's an this guy is like this crazy old Englishman, all right, living in Greece, and the heat is not helping him. So anyway, we kind of see flashbacks of these conversations as he's making his way to this man's house. And we find out that, like, he sent him a letter, like, no forms of communication with this man. Like, he does not have a phone. He does not have a computer. Like, pigeon mail it is. So he arrives, and let's just say he's living, this man has built his own house, and let's say it is really based on the, what's the famous Greek sculpture? The Pantheon, is it?
Oh, girl, I'll tell you anything about Rome. I can't tell you anything about Greece. I haven't read Rick Reardon in too long.
The Parthenon. The Pantheon is in Rome. The Parthenon. Okay, so he's this man, let's just say he's crazy rich, has built his own pretty much small Parthenon to live in. And your man's like, wow, this is amazing, blah, blah. Anyway, he brings him in, and we find out the reason why he's like discredited is that he has this old Greek coin that he's like, this is the treasure of whatever Greek god or whatever that has fallen to earth. And we're like, okay, he's insane. And we find out that there are other people living there that believe in this idea. Kind of like a cult.
It's like Judas's testament.
So anyway, they start formulating a plan of where they think it might be. And like, this man is just like, I can buy off the Greek authorities and we can start digging up like streets in the middle of the cities. He is just convinced. So what begins is like this whole, we see how kind of obsessed they all are with this idea. And it's not more like, as I say, National Treasure is like, haha, funny, funny, funny. This is like, oh my God, there's something wrong with these people. Do you know, this is, their lives are just based on this. And we kind of see like that when he first introduced to these people, like there was this whole like, oh, it looks so glamorous. And, you know, he was looking at like through rose tinted glasses. And then as we get through the book, you're like, these people can't look after themselves. You know, these people are just, you know, this is all they can talk about. It's not healthy. It's, you know, you can't question anything. Otherwise, they're going to get really angry. And your man eventually, I'm going to say, like, after weeks of, like, trying to, like, locate different areas, he finds this. There's this locked room in the house. I'm doing such a bad job explaining this my version of this book. Locked room in the house, and he's like, oh, what is it? And they're like, oh, that's just the eccentric old man's private room. He's like, grand, grand, grand. And eventually there is a day where everyone's out of the place except him. He comes back early, he has a tummy bug or whatever, and he finds the room unlocked, and he goes in, and doesn't he find all these coins? Except they're all not plastic, but it's kind of like your man's attempt at different times of molding this coin to get it absolutely perfect. And he realizes the whole thing is fake. That everything he kind of based on, and these people's lives dedicated to this, it's all just lies.
You couldn't even clean up the evidence.
Girl, I just said that they can't even look after themselves. Your man keeps the room locked. He's like, yep, done and dusted.
Well done.
And I think what happens then is him, because he's like, this man is absolutely crazed. Like, and he starts thinking more about what people had told him, that like there's a reason he can't go back to England is because there's questions about like, did he murder his best friend in college? Because they had a falling out about this whole gold coin thing. And he's like, oh my God, is my life in danger? And I'm going to say that it all comes to a head. He tries to convince people quietly to leave. And he's like, I'll show you. I've taken these coins as evidence. And the whole place is CCTV'd without them knowing. So like, he's watching them in the rooms. He's watching them everywhere.
That bitch is on the Truman Show.
Like, it is madness. And I think we see that he doesn't succeed. And I think he ends up being killed.
Oh, stop. And like, it's like he's like being buried and he's going to be remembered as like a martyr for this like fake cause. And
yeah,
all
I think your man, how like, I think we get into a situation where it's like your man has like this protection kind of detailing. It's like, yeah, kill him. And your man's like, how can I get out of this? And then the next thing we see is like him, you know, doing a eulogy at his funeral. And he's like, you know, he got so close that the gods decided to destroy him. And you're like, oh my God.
Oh my
like,
God.
He's actually talking about himself, you know.
Interesting.
That's my guess.
There's one kind of similarity that you touched on that, like,
there's
I think
a protagonist.
There is, in fact, spoiler alert, there is a protagonist. No, there was one, like, when you started, there was one element that kind of really rang true to the book that I'd say anyone who's read The Secret History might have been like, Okay. So, okay, you know, the way I'm going to introduce this, The Secret History by Donna Tartt. Do you know when you do those, if you've ever been in an independent bookshop, especially, and they have the blind date with the book, yeah, and you read the first sentence and you buy the book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got to tell you the very first sentence of the prologue.
Okay.
The snow in the mountains was melting and Bunny had been dead for several weeks before we came to understand the gravity of her situation. He'd been dead for 10 days before they found him, you know. It was one of the biggest manhunts in Vermont history. State troopers, the FBI, even an army helicopter. The college closed, the dye factory in Hampden shut down. People coming from New Hampshire, upstate New York, as far away as Boston. And then I'll give you one more. It's difficult to believe that Henry's modest plan could have worked so well despite these unforeseen events. We hadn't intended to hide the body where it couldn't be found. In fact, we hadn't hidden it at all, but had simply left it where it fell in hopes that some luckless passerby would stumble over it before anyone noticed he was missing. So immediately.
So there's a murder.
And the protagonist is involved. And there's been a plan. There's been a couple of them have worked to murder this man, Bunny. So I'm going to dial it back. So that's the very prologue. Okay. We get introduced right as something horrible has happened. And this is the narrator's recount of events.
Okay.
The narrator writing back, he's 28. He's writing back to a time when he was about 22. And like, I just have to say, like, you're the plot of this book, like, you're immediately drawn in.
Okay.
That is such a good way to start a book. And I was researching this a lot, and obviously this is a really, like, this is a cult classic, so people have a lot to say. And I stumbled across this one article where they were saying that, like, there's this Shakespeare method of writing where he says that apprehension is always more effective than surprise. Mm-hmm. And like, oh my God, I believe him. Like, there's nothing more I wanted than to know what happened as soon as I read that sentence in the book. I was like, what the fuck am I getting into? There's like FBI, this is insane. So we're based in a college, Camden College in Vermont.
Okay.
And our narrator, Richard, has just moved there. Richard Pappin, I think, has just moved there from California. And already he's starting to tweak a lot of details of his story in California, we realize. So he's walking in on this new campus in autumn, and he's immediately, he wants to rewrite his own history. He wants a more interesting backstory for himself. Mm. And he says in the quote, he's here to fabricate a new and far more satisfying history. So he's here to study Greek. But as he gets into the Dean Admissions, they basically tell him like, oh, sorry, that class is full. And he's a bit disturbed by this. He's like, what do you mean it's full? That's what I'm here to study. And they're like, well, in Camden College, there is a lecturer, Julian, and he's very strange and he only takes on 5 students at a time.
Okay.
So Richard is like, you know, ask him. I want to be in that class, you know, like ask him, can they do that? And the dean's admissions, they advise against it immediately. And they're like, look, you don't realize that Julian works on his own. If you go there, like those 5 students are very isolated from the rest of the school. Like your only contact will be Julian and these other 5 students. It's not really, he won't get a full look at Camden College if he goes this route.
No.
But Richard is intrigued. And this sounds really interesting. This sounds like a great story. He's also just got a massive love for Greek mythology, and it's what he wants to study. So he tries to worm his way into this group. And we get the whole, like, you know, like the shopping montage when he goes and gets new coats with his like his scholarship. Well, not really scholarship money, but his loan. Anyway, he goes and gets loads of clothes. He meets up with them. He wows Julian, the lecturer, whatever. The usual kind of like, I'm going to get into this class. I'm going to get into the popular group. And when we start meeting this class is when we start meeting like our main characters of the book. So we've got a cast of Julian, the lecturer, we've got Richard, the protagonist, and then we've got 5 other students. And it's the characters that make this. So I kind of wanted to tell you about them as well. Okay. So obviously Julian, the Greek professor, he's mad, he's a genius, they worship him. Okay. We've got Henry, who's very, very, very serious, and he's very tall. He kind of reads as like the very scary, kind of intimidating man. And he's the most academic of the group. We've got 2 twins, Camilla and Charles. The names are a bit unfortunate. But again, they're very, like all of this whole group, they're very reclusive. And they're both, like everyone's beautiful. This whole book, every single thing in this book is beautiful.
That's not reality. I'm sorry.
But this is dark academia, honey. Everyone's hot and no one eats and everyone smokes. So we've got Camilla and Charles. We've got Henry. We have Francis. And for some reason, this character was so real to me. That despite the fact they mentioned like a million times that he's a redhead, I was like, no. He's specifically, he is Charlie Heaton, you know, from Stranger Things, the guy who plays Jonathan, like that's him. I don't know why, he's so vividly Charlie Heaton. And he's one of my favorite characters. He's like another brilliant mind in the group, but he's very lazy. Compared to Henry, like Henry reckons that he's just as good as Henry is, but he's just a lazy learner. He does what he needs to, that's it. And he is gay, but he's closeted a little bit. But everyone in his friend group kind of knows he's gay. And then we have Bunny, who we now know in the prologue that Bunny is dead.
Bunny.
Yeah. Now, in the book, Bunny is one of the most enigmatic characters, like right away. Like he's one of the ones you're obviously most interested in learning. And he's probably the one who's the most full of life. Which is interesting because he's the
and
one.
And then
who
they snuffed it out because they were jealous. I'm just going to say that now.
What I'm going to say is it's just such a clever book because it's so real to life that like even the victim can be a dick. Though you know what's coming to poor Bunny, he's such an asshole. Like you kind of realize as the book goes on that like you can see why everything is about to happen. It feels very real. And again, I picture him so vividly, but this time as Barry Keoghan. You know, what's he in? He's
okay.
God, he'd be perfect as him. Like he'd be absolutely perfect. I watched that movie, is it The Green Knight? And Barry's kind of playing this kind of annoying kind of thug knight. And like that's who I picture. So Bunny is very impossible to deal with. Like we meet him and he is really charismatic. He's the first person, the first like student of the 5 to kind of reach out to Richard properly and kind of welcome him in. And he's friends with everyone. And he decides he's going to take Richard to dinner. and they go to like a five star because everyone in the group is wealthy, and Richard is kind of trying to keep the illusion that even though his dad sells auto parts in California, that his dad's actually like in the oil industry. Like, don't worry, I have money too, kind of a thing. So he brings him to a massive five-star restaurant. He says he's going to treat him to a meal. They get tons of food. They drink for the whole day. And then Bunny kind of goes, oh, you know, you can spot me for this one. Sorry, I forgot my wallet. And Richard is freaked out. Richard's drunk. He's like, oh my God, I'm like a day in the school and already everyone's going to know I'm broke. What am I going to do? So he kind of has to tell Richard, like, look, I can't, like, I cannot. Like, he's just spent the last of his money to get clothes to go to this restaurant. And he's completely shook. So Richard rings Henry, the very serious academic, and Henry arrives and pays for it. And he kind of gives Richard his first warning. He's like, I can't believe he'd do that to you. And Richard's like, no, he just forgot his wallet. He's like, no, he didn't. Like, he does this to everybody. This is his thing. He mooches off everyone. So he's a huge mooch, but we realize he's also just so well-rounded, because he's not, like, he's from a family called Corcorans and they're not so nice. And we're told that Benny is the nicest guy in the family, and or Bunny is the nicest guy in the family. And the way it's all revealed is just great. Bunny, I'm going to put a trigger warning on this book for racism, homophobia. That is Bunny. Bunny is the friend that nobody likes at all. He's horrible. He uses the F slur quite a lot. Like, massive homophobia. And then even in the company of Francis, the other character, aka Charlie Heaton, who is gay. It's, oh God, it's, oh, just Bunny's scenes, he's just ridiculous, but it's so, so good. What an amazing character to have. So this book, it's 600 pages. It's an excellent concept, but okay. Is it too long? Yes.
Okay.
There's a lot of scenes in Donna Terry. Like, when you step back from her, you feel like the book was real and then it happened and to be honest, it's because she includes an awful lot of like, very mundane info, and it takes you a long time to get through every scene. And even though every single scene is very memorable, I do feel like there's a lot of filler in between, and she's an excellent writer, so she gets away with it. But like, reading The Secret History, it's a bit of a commitment. Like, you need a lot of time and you need to sit down.
It's 617 pages.
And the thing is you probably need to read it in long sittings, because you could be reading the same scene for a couple of days otherwise. Okay. And that gets boring really fast. So it's a realism novel, and I'd compare it to Jonathan Franzen, but he's a step back from her. He's less so, like, he's a bit more engaging, I think, because there's just a bit more gossip. Whereas this one is very, like, this is Richard going through, and you're only in Richard's head, whereas Jonathan Franzen usually swaps characters. So it wouldn't compare to him in The Highest Light, but that's kind of the vibe we're looking at. It's American, dark academia, massive novel. And it's absolutely adored. It's so romanticized because of the way that's, like, the genre of dark academia is to make it like college is the best place and the spookiest place on earth, even though a lot of the time it's just a business. There's not a whole lot more. And what I loved about it most, that I wish there was more of, is there's so much like actual Greek mythology and classics and info, and even the Greek language, like, relayed in these books. And those segments they're such good little glimpses, and it just shows like how clever and well studied Donna Tartt really is. So I'm going to give you some info on her now.
Okay.
So Miss Donna Tartt, she's brilliant. I was watching some interviews of her, and she is the coolest lady I've ever seen. She's so glamorous. She's so well spoken. And she's, you know, the way usually with a book like this, like, it'd be a very closed author, you'd feel like they're very shy, they're very kind of in themselves. She's so charismatic, she's amazing to listen to.
Oh, so wow, now I'm after looking her up.
Yeah, she's beautiful, isn't she?
She is.
And like, I feel like there's a massive, like, one of the focus points of this book is beauty. And there's this Greek saying, I wish I wrote it down, but there's this Greek saying that like beauty should be shocking. And beauty is kind of what reminds us we're alive, because something just shocks you with how beautiful it is. And that's a lot of moments in this book. I think that's her, like the way she presents herself, she's amazing. Like, oh my God, she's so cool. So, and another major theme that I think just shows how clever she is like that Peter, that I keep going to call him Peter, but Richard Pappin, just he believes in faith. And as he recounts the story, it's like he's kind of telling you, like, oh my God, if that didn't happen, then this story wouldn't have happened. And it's through the whole book that every single moment is pivotal, kind of like the way Breaking Bad is written, that everything perfectly goes wrong. And it's
Okay.
brilliant. She's a huge Charles Dickens fan. And when you read this book, that makes total sense. That's like a, oh, duh. She loves Charles Dickens, obviously, because she writes about the classism and the different class struggles, and also like just the way she writes about the seasons. Like, autumn in this book is so beautiful. It's just the best showcase of autumn. And then Donna, unsurprisingly, for being the genius she is, she grew up in a very like literary heavy home, where when she was like 7 or 8, she could recite like entire poems start to finish. And she started with A.A. Milne, obviously like Winnie the Pooh, but she goes right to Edgar Allan Poe. Like, she could just recite poetry. She was first published when she was 13, I think, for her poems. And it's also rumored that she dated Bret Easton Ellis in college.
Who's
He's the
that?
writer of American Psycho and Clockwork Orange. Apparently they
Jesus.
dated. Amazing. Amazing.
My God,
So she wrote,
we're getting the deep dive into her
oh, we're
personal
getting the deep
life.
dive. I'm obsessed with this woman. So she wrote this book in 1992, or no, I think she wrote it it took her 8 years anyway, and she released it in 1992. Then she wrote A Little Friend in 2002, and then she wrote The Goldfinch in 2012. So her books take about 10 years each,
So
and she won.
we're coming up to the next
Ooh,
book.
we could be. She won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction for The Goldfinch. Also, when she was like 15, she met Willie Morris, who is the youngest editor ever of Harper Magazine, and he called her a genius when she was 15. So, like, what the
Wow.
fuck? She was only 29 when she wrote this. It's her very first book. And my final bit, because I know I'm spamming you with Donna Tartt info because she's so fucking cool. According when you read articles about her, they all refer to her as very secretive and
Okay.
mysterious. But then there's a quote with the Irish Times, and she says, like, that's not true. She just says she likes her freedom of shutting the door, closing the curtains, and not participating in the life of culture.
I
Iconic.
like that. Yeah.
Iconic. And yeah, I just love her. And she has another, like, she's just so well spoken in all of her interviews. And there's an interview that I watched, and it's the one I'd recommend if you wanted to kind of check out more on this book, The Secret History, but also just see what an icon Donna Tartt is. There's one where she's interviewing right as this book launches, and the interviewer is asking her, like, oh, you know, like you were published first for poetry, and you know, you're now a novelist. Like, would you ever go back? And she's like, oh, I'd love to. But she says that like poets need to have an ear for language, whereas it's like novelists have a disease of language. I thought that was
Wow.
just, I love her. So this book, for me personally, as I was reading it, it was sitting on maybe almost a 4-star, because
Okay.
it just took so much to get through. But then as soon as you finish it and you look at the final, like you step back and you look at the whole picture, it's a masterpiece. Like, it's a 5-star. But it just does depend on your reading preferences. I just would go in and just like read this when you have time off. This is not a pick up and relax book. This is a very truck through and follow the story and notice how good all of the characters are laid out. Every character could have its own point of view novel in this. It's, oh, excellent. What a masterclass. Five out of five. Five out of five.
Sorry. Big yawn. Interesting.
Yeah. That was like a spam, but like, oh, Becca, please read it. We could do a deep dive on this.
I feel like you're going to cover The Goldfinch very soon.
I haven't read it yet. And it's going to be massively long. So okay. I have a couple picked out. I want to read None of This Is Serious. Oh, I have that one ready to read. And then I might read The Goldfinch. Oh, I will. I know I will. And then I want to read The Goldfinch right after. So,
okay. Yes. Right. Interesting. My guess was somewhat right.
It was when you were talking about the murder. Archaeologist. When you were talking about him, I was like, he sounds like Julian.
And just that he has like eccentric. A cult-like following. I mean, I think I did really well.
It's a big murder.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of the themes right. Just the plot was wrong. But interesting. I must read it.
I think you should. It's so cool because, like, obviously the whole center point is the fact that they murder Bunny. That happens at the halfway mark.
But they obviously planned it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a whole, like, the book is so full of, like, why this happened.
Premeditated. Like.
Yeah. No, it is. And then the way it goes down afterwards is, like, how wrong could it get? And the reason they kill him is probably the biggest, that's you the biggest know what plot.
It's giving me vibes of. Have you ever seen the movie? Is it Numbers or something like that? It's got Sandra Bullock, Ryan Gosling, and I can't remember the third person, but it's these two high school students try to commit the perfect murder.
Oh.
And it's kind of based on Leonard and Loeb, kind of that whole, it's very much inspired by them, but like they're testing out their own theories of, like, you know, morality and all this kind of stuff. And that's kind of the vibes this is giving me, is that these students are like, we're going to test whatever theory.
Yeah. I can't spoil. Oh, Becca, okay. It's the reason that it happens is just amazing. Like, I was getting to the point where I was finally understanding and I was like, oh my god, this is so fucking good. Like, it's just excellent. It's so good.
Let's just say, kids,
so good.
That murder is wrong. There is never a reason to murder someone. Nikki, don't be making those faces. Right? Okay, let's just make that stance very, very clear. Because Nikki's like, now that I understood the reason that it was happening.
Oh, no, the reason for this is cracked.
Okay, there is never a good enough, that murder's wrong, okay? Cannot take another person's life. Let's get into my book.
I just love the silence.
We're like, that, right.
I'm just thinking of the 1% and I'm like.
I knew it was going to come back to kill the rich.
Okay, I'm looking at Careering by Daisy Buchanan. She's the writer of Insatiable, right? Yeah, the one thing with Daisy Buchanan's novels is they are so visually appealing.
Yeah, they are. Like,
I didn't read Insatiable because of Chloe's review on it way back when. But I would have read it if it were not for that review. I would have 100% read it. I would have ate that shit up and probably not enjoyed it the way that Chloe didn't. But Careering by Daisy Buchanan. So this cover, when you look at a Daisy Buchanan book, they always do this, like, as in, like, her two books. She only has two, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but the thing that they do that's similar to the last book is they kind of have two colours on the book and they're divided at the three-quarter mark or, like, the two-third mark. So, like, the bottom half of this book is this kind of salmon pink and the top half is white. And then right on top of that split, you have this cutout of a couch and this woman planking into the sofa into the sofa cushions, and like, oh my god, she's a mood.
Yeah.
And it says here that on the right track or coming off the rails. And the
time we also appreciate her outfit though.
Oh yeah.
Like it
she's got like a ballerina. Like a
ballerina, doesn't it?
Yeah, she's got like a ballerina leotard. Tank top when they go yeah. really low at the back. And then like this gorgeous, gorgeous kind of satiny gilded skirt. Like, yeah. oh god, it's beautiful on her. And then like the classic like ballerina bob as well. The black bob. She's got the Donna Tartt hair.
No, it is stunning. It is a beautiful cover.
Yeah. Oh, it's stunning. And like, I think the title is brilliant with the, like, I think we're getting a good image of what we're here to expect this character is feeling. So careering and the fact that she looks so fucking burnt out. I think that's exactly what this book is about. You've covered one before that I feel like I'm slightly basing this on, and there's no such thing as an easy job.
Yeah.
Yeah, this gives me the same energy that this is a young adult, probably, well, I'd say she's 29. She's going into her 30s. This is when it usually hits us that like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? And she is slowly climbing the corporate ladder, probably at a bit of standstill. So like the her that she was when she was 25, she's now the same. She's at the same place in her life, whereas she's always been on an upward trajectory. She's kind of been stuck now for 4 years at this level of kind of mid corporate ladder. And she has just had this realization that the last 4 years have gone by without her even noticing, because work is so mundane and painful. And she goes to work, she's too tired to do anything at the weekends. That's kind of her whole existence. It's all like waiting to go back to work and trying to recover from work. And as soon as she makes this discovery and kind of notices how exhausted she is and completely disillusioned by everything, I think she makes the snap decision that like, oh my God, I need to quit my job. And she quits it extremely suddenly. Like she just literally walks into the office, walks into her boss's room and goes like, I'm done. And he's like, what? What do you mean? I'm finished. And he's like starting to talk about, oh, you know, if you want a career break, da, 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 you're, you know, 2 weeks notice, we'll get da, da, da. And he's being really nice and like offering her the solutions for corporate to take like a week of mental health leave or whatever he thinks she's asking for. But she just walks out of the building. And I think it's kind of like in the middle of a collapse crisis moment when she walks out and she's in her corporate like white blouse and blazer, and she just starts taking the blazer off as she's leaving, and she's like unbuttoning her shirt, and she's like, I just need out of this life, like I need out of this skin. So I think she's hit like her mental, like her mental capacity. She yeah. cannot do it anymore. So this also could be influenced to the fact that I'm reading Otessa Moshfegh at the moment. Because this is like such a theme, just the burnt out, like done with life, 20 something year old. I also have to give her a name. And I think her name is Penny.
Well, I mean, to be honest, like a lot of books at the moment, they love having that unnamed protagonist.
Yes, they do the Fight Club. The Chuck, what's his name? Chuck Palewski. Isn't he the one who kind of coined that? Like the book is just the narrator.
Yeah.
And you don't know who they are.
It's a big theme at the moment.
It really works with certain characters. Like it works with Otessa Moshfegh. It works with Fight Club kind of being the founder of that theme. Like when it's an unreliable narrator who's really self-involved. Oh, it works excellently. So I just
use that as my excuse whenever I can't come up with a name for a character.
Let's say that's what's happening.
Okay.
Unnamed narrator. Self-involved, total wreck.
I'm just going to say they do actually have a name in this book.
It's Penny.
I was like, should I tell her that they do have a name? Just because otherwise she's going to kill me later on, being like, you convinced me that it was an unnamed narrator. Like,
yeah, no, you were leading me down a very mean road. Like a lamb to slaughter. So I think Penny even though we barely know her name, it's one of those vibes when they say her name once or twice and then you're like, oh yeah, I'll realize on Goodreads when I read reviews after I've read this book that her name was actually Penny all along. So I think Penny has quit her job. She's had a breakdown. Everyone in her outside circle starts to hear about this. So I bet the first thing that happens is her Slack channel on her phone starts immediately going off. And people are like, oh my God, girl, I saw what happened. Are you okay? Oh my God, did you tell the boss to fuck off? And like, there's already all these rumors circulating of what she did to have him so pale and like shook, and like, the fact that like they're immediately trying to replace her in the company, they're like, oh my God, what happened? So she's walking home. I think she's in London and she chucks her mobile phone into the Thames. It's gone. She doesn't need Slack anymore. She's off the radar. I think she gets home and her housemate immediately notices. I'd say her housemate is some like artsy, creative, failed artist whose parents are really rich and he's always home, and he notices and he's like, girl, like, what is going on? And she immediately goes into her room and he's panicking. He's like, oh my God, oh my God, do we need to call a therapist? Like, what's going on? Oh my God, do we need to go to ER? Are you having a mental breakdown? And she's like, I'm fine, I need a break. And so he's the one who's kind of calling her friends. He's kind of having the intervention for her. Eventually her mom comes over from Ireland and is like, girl, what is going on? But Penny is very calm about this. She just realizes like, I need a new career. I have a lot of savings. I'm just going to find my way. And I think she starts signing on for like the most bizarre jobs that she can possibly find. So I'd say one of her first jobs is she lies on her CV and she's a nightclub bouncer in this really rough pub at South London, extremely like not a good vibe for her to be in, but she takes it on the chin. She's like, yeah, this could be me. This I could want to buff up. This might be what I want. And she's going in really disillusioned, and then something happens and she's like maybe held up a like knife point or something, or shoved to the ground, like while these people are fighting like on top of her, like above her. And she's like, yeah, no, this isn't for me. So she has the same moment of just handing in her notice, and maybe people laugh at her this time because she's signed up for such a weird job. I'm trying to think of another job she could land in. I feel like she could do a couple of really mundane ones. Like she decides to do like a hairdresser apprenticeship and she's just sweeping up hair for like 3 weeks. And she's like, again, she wakes up and she's like, okay, I'm landing myself in an even worse position than before. And I'm getting paid fuck all, like fuck this. And I think she finds her way across London, across all these odd jobs, and eventually ends up on an oil rig.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And that's when she realizes that like, I need a break. Like I need a career break. And I think all through this, as she's looking for jobs, a glimpse in this book has been that she's reading, and that she's, every time she goes for a job, you know, like she might go for, I don't know, she might go for a position, like she might decide she wants to be an art historian, and she's like, oh my God, this is like in that book, No Other, or Other People's Clothes, and like I'm gonna be an art history buff, and da-da. And she's referencing literature the whole way across. And I think she eventually walks into her local library at the very end and gets a nice library job, and
the dream,
she's at peace. And I think she'll realize that it's not all about the career. Like the career doesn't matter as long as she has enough money and enough time to enjoy the life she has. And she likes reading and she likes her friends and she likes when her mom comes over, and she just settles into like, I don't need to be a person that's like celebrated to like celebrate my person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's this book.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's very clear that like this is about work, like careering. It is about work, but the theme of it is all right. The plot is not. Like, you very much was like, I'm basing this on there is no such thing as an easy job.
Yeah, exactly.
which this one deals a lot more with the actual watching someone in burnout. Whereas with There Is No Such Thing as an Easy Job, we were watching someone after they've experienced that and how they're her recovering from it. So, right. Careering. I'm going to say my review starts off. I've got my review in front of me as well that I wrote for it. Actually, let me just say this is a Neck Alley book. Yes, I know this is the X amount one that I've done in a row, but I told you there are so many. I have been reading physical books as well. I've started peppering them in because sometimes the Neck Alley books aren't always the best. Okay, so anyway, this book, my first line in my review is this made me incredibly anxious. All right, which, and then in brackets, which I'm finding is far too easy to do, which to be fair, I have anxiety. So, right, we have two different kind of main characters in this book, and we switch kind of point of views between both of them. There is one that I think I related to a lot more that I preferred their storyline, so we're going to get into that one first. So, first up, we have Imogen. Okay, which I love the name. Imogen. Love the name.
It just reminds me of like the oh, what's that song that plays every time someone dies? Oh, there's like an SNL. Wait, now, if I look up Imogen
Okay, don't
meme
ruin the.
song,
Can you
wait.
not ruin the name for me,
It's
please?
the hide and seek one. What is it again? I'm sorry, I can't like concentrate until I get this. What is this? Oh my
I love how
God.
you're playing music. Like, can we not get the episode copyrighted? Thank you.
Oh, can you hear it?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it automatically shares my sound.
I'm not
That's
hearing
weird.
all of it, but I'm hearing like bits of it, yeah.
Oh, wait, this is the one. What you say? Only
Okay.
you only meant well because you did.
Okay. I didn't
Whenever
hear
I
that one
hear
playing now. That obviously went to your headphones, but okay.
yeah, every time I
Thank
hear
you.
Imogen, I think of Andy Samberg and Bill Hader in that SNL sketch. That's all I was trying
Do
to
they
say.
use the word Imogen
No,
or?
because it's a song by Imogen Heaps.
Okay.
What you say?
Right. Let's get back into the book review. That was one of your wilder little segues, but okay. So you can tell Nikki's getting tired. So Imogen is in her late 20s, I think. I can't remember what age she is, but I think she's in her late 20s.
I got that right.
You got that right. And she is a sex blogger who has done a series of kind of unpaid internships and juggling kind of different waitressing jobs. But she really wants to make it in the world of media, like, really wants to be a journalist, wants to have her own column, all that kind of stuff. So we see that she's doing her current internship is at Panache. So very much kind of based on a woman's magazine, fashion, very, very glamorous. And she is interning there and not treated great. But what happens is that she lands a job at this new startup. So Panache, they're going to start a kind of a young aimed at young women kind of magazine or online kind of reader thing, and she lands a job because they're like, we need someone like her, like, we love your blog. And you're like, if you loved her blog, why didn't you give her a job earlier? So she finally thinks she makes it at this, and she's got tons of ideas. And anyway, what we kind of see is that they really want to use her sex stories, and she writes them, and they go viral, absolutely viral. Like, I think she says something like, what's her name? Emily Ratajkowska. I can't pronounce her surname, but you know that model, she shares it.
Oh, yes, I do
Like
know
Ariana
her.
Grande shares it, and it's like, oh my God.
Ariana.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff. Like,
Girl,
it goes.
Aria Grande.
I said
Who?
Ariana.
You said Aria.
I said Ariana. I
Okay,
said
okay.
Ariana.
That's okay. You'll hear it in editing. It's okay. Don't worry, girl.
Ariana, like, it goes viral. And what we kind of witness is after this that her editor, who I'll get into in a second, just wants to keep getting those numbers. They have to be bigger, they have to be better, her stories have to be wilder. And she just, it's just grinding. Like, we see the amount of stress that she's put under and waiting for that moment where she's going to collapse. Like, she loses any sense of who she was. And, you know, nothing she's going to do is going to be good enough. And it's just, it was like how kind of far Imogen goes down that road. It's you're like, oh my God, you're not okay. Like, she's having anxiety attacks all the time. Like, her health is just in the toilet. Like, her mental health gone. And the fact that her editor is kind of like, I have to achieve these numbers, so I have to put you under this amount of stress. And you're like, oh my God. It's just, it's so, I was so anxious. I was like sick while reading some of it. I was like, oh my God, you can't do this to another person. So like, her whole well-being suffers. So then on the other hand, we've got Imogen's boss, who's Harriet. So we're seeing her point of view. So the thing with Imogen is that she has to meet Harriet's expectations, you know, her boss's kind of demands. Harriet also has to meet her own expectations from her boss, and those demands. So it's kind of just this whole ladder of like, or, you know, layered effect of like, everyone is under this enormous pressure. Like, it's not just Imogen, it's from the top down. Like, so at the start of the book, anyone would think that Harriet has this like perfect life, absolutely glamorous, wonderful career. Imogen really admires her. She's like, oh my God, she's so cool, she's amazing at her job, like, oh my God, she's so successful. But again, she has her own like insurmountable goals to achieve. And her life, she is a workaholic, utter workaholic. And we kind of realize why is that she is, she's going through grief. Work is her way of coping with it. And she's passed over for a job and given the no as kind of like, oh, well, you didn't get this job, so here you go. And she's trying not to be disappointed and tries to make this kind of her thing. But it's kind of, she again loses her own kind of what she wants to do, because she's looking at numbers, she's trying to meet the demands of her boss, who sounds like an insane woman, and everything suffers because of it. So we've got these two women in very similar situations work-wise, but the impact of what happens to them is very different. So, I mean, there are very heavy sections. I would say that there is humor in it, and like, Imogen in particular is very witty, like very sharp, and those do cut through. Like, there were some really funny bits that I can't remember now, but like, I was laughing a lot. Like,
I know that they were really funny bits. I can't remember them, but they were really funny.
They're really funny. But I think the main thing that this book does is really questions what people would do. I think I related more to Imogen because maybe my age, and, you know, going through that kind of grind of like, oh my God, if I just work a little bit harder, I'm going to make it. And yeah, I think it's really questioning like, what would you do to get your dream job, and how hard people have to work to get there. And, you know, when that
and dream, all the risks and just the luck.
Yeah, like, I mean, the amount that you have to sacrifice to get there. And then if you reach there, and that's the thing, if you reach that point, is it worth it? Does the dream turn out to be as good as you thought? And a lot of the times then you find out, I have to work a bit harder to reach another level. And it's really, oh my God, it's so grinding, this book. Like, it
yeah, really... And I think when you work that hard for something and you get there, it's a very tricky slope to be on, because all of the trauma that they went through, like, when they get to the top of what they want, if it's not all worth the trauma, then they haven't gone far enough yet, and they go through even more and to get higher.
I just think, like, reading, I think with Imogen, like, we see more of the burnout. Not that I'm saying that the Harriet chapters aren't good. They were. I just think for anybody going through something, you're going to relate to one of the characters a bit more. And for me, it was Imogen. And I think, I mean, I have a quote saved, like, because, you know, this is what she says about, like, losing herself, her sense of identity, even. Like, her sex blog, it was something she did as a hobby. She really enjoyed doing it. And now that she's being paid to write about it, she's like, I don't want to anymore. Do you know, it's taken any joy out of it. There's a bit where she goes to a sex thing that she has to write about, and Harriet is like, yeah, well, I want you to kind of, it needs to be better. And she has to, like, rewrite the whole thing and make it false. And it's taking away, I think, the thing with her sex blog is that it's so honest. You know, it's her being vulnerable, sharing, you know, certain situations she's been in. And I think that's what people connected with. You know, it wasn't her talking about sex, it was her talking about, you know, I mean, there is this kind of whole thing about consent does kind of come up in one of her stories, or, you know, she's exploring, you know, her sexuality or something like that. It's all kind of, you know, or her pleasures, whatever. It's that kind of open vulnerability of, like, I'm comfortable to talk about this. And that kind of gets lost. But anyway, this quote, I think, was, I didn't include it in my review, but because it was there in quite a lot of them, but I did save it to read it out when she loses her kind of her own sense of self. For a long time, I was confused. For a long time, I confused success with self-esteem. I was constantly prepared to give all of my power away. I thought it was up to someone else to allocate a status to me. I have let my employers decide how I was allowed to feel about myself, whether or not I was allowed to like myself. And I think that really says a lot. At the end, I don't think this book has the resolution I wanted it to. Again, that's life. But you're like, oh, I don't think this is opening up for a great continuation for you. Not to give anything away. But I felt, I don't know, maybe because I'd been going through, not quite burnout, but extreme work demands.
And just like, oh while my God.
While I was reading this, I was like, yeah, I could see that happening. Do you know?
Yeah, we're very lucky that even though we're working to the bone, we're working at something we really, really love.
Exactly.
Do you know? And even though you can overdo it and burn out, you don't lose. Like, we're not losing the love yet anyway.
No, we're not.
We're just losing the sleep.
But I think for a lot of people, this is a book that they could connect with. Do you know, I think we all have our, you know, our dream job or whatever. And it was... very interesting. So
what's the rating out of 10?
I would say it's probably about a 7, I would say. I rated it quite high. I'd be very interested to read Insatiable afterwards.
Yeah, because I stayed away from this book because you had obviously told me you were going to do it. You had it on your neck, Ali. But also I just wasn't tempted because of the last review on Insatiable. So I'd be interested to see. I'm so curious about her style of writing.
I enjoyed her style of writing. If anything, I just wanted the book to be from Imogen's point of view.
Yeah.
Harriet brings her own thing, you know, with grief and this workaholic kind of nature and, you know, her having to deal with all of that. I just felt, yeah. I don't know. I just preferred Imogen, but that's my point of view. Someone else would be fair. Like, I thought, you know, Harriet, I'm going through that portion of my life, and, you know, because she's much older.
Yeah, but Harriet, you know, put the nail on the head for them.
I did like her writing, though, I have to say, and it was one that I was a bit more kind of, I'm not sure I'm going to like this before I started. And that's the thing, you know, it was like when I was told about Sally Rooney. If someone that you trust tells you, I didn't really like them, do you know?
Yeah.
But look, we're all open to our own opinions. I'd be interested because I've seen a lot of people saying, I didn't like Insatiable, but I really liked this. So it's different books, do you know?
Yeah. I'd love to give it a go now. I think I will.
I thought it was really interesting. I enjoyed it. Even though it made me very anxious.
I know that, and it's hard to do the burnout books now. I feel like we're a little bit burnt out from burnout books as a fault. So the fact that she did it so well, that like it didn't feel like it's been done before by what you were describing. It feels very,
I
it's
felt for
really got its own kind of stamp on the
I
scorned
think
woman.
exactly. I think more it showed a different side to burnout, that it wasn't someone who was filled with rage. It was more kind of how I would probably go through burnout of being incredibly anxious, having panic attacks,
Yeah.
doubting myself the whole time. I felt that was more a different kind of question I brought up with. And I think as
Yeah.
well, the fact that it was a dream job, it wasn't someone in a mundane kind of office job that they hate. It was someone like, this is my dream job. Why isn't it working?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really hard, hard question to ask
And
and to
it's a
look
hard
at,
lesson for them to learn as well.
you know. So no, I thought it was very interesting. Like there's certain plot points in it that I'm like, this doesn't make sense. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But a little bit of, you know, obviously content warnings with that book. It obviously discusses sex. Obviously, there is sexual content. I would say mental health. Consent just comes up in one of her stories, a little bit. But yeah, it's an interesting book. But yeah. So
Beautiful.
yeah.
They're so different, the two books.
Very different. Yeah. Because I was, oh, last night I was going through, I was like, what are we gonna cover? And I was like, oh, I'll do careering. There we go.
I know, I felt the same. And then I was like, oh my God, why am I not doing The Secret History
Yeah.
by Donna Tartt? Love that
But yeah,
woman.
I enjoyed our conversation on our two books today.
That was nice.
That was
What a lovely
nice.
episode you people have been treated to.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And I'm gonna title it National Treasure.
National
Just
Trevor.
no, National Treasure. Just
No,
to,
Trevor.
you
That's so funny.
know.
National Trevor.
Yeah, I had to warn my new housemates about, I was like, yeah, when I get a bit tired, I was like, my words, best of luck.
Yeah, they're gone.
Best of luck, like.
They're flowing. I know when I get tired, I just don't make any sense.
Same
I
here.
lose all ability to communicate.
So, I think you can tell we're both quite sleepy.
We are.
We're
We
both
will now
quite
go to
sleepy.
bed, dear
Yes.
Grim Readers.
Well, actually, I have so many missed video calls. I told Matteo I was recording this morning. He has clearly forgotten. So I
Oh,
will have to call Matteo and be like, I'm
that's very
alive.
cute. Emmett's in
Yeah.
bed because of night shift.
Oh, poor Emmett. Yeah,
I'm gonna go out
because
and get a coffee.
I'd be like, I'm not going to go and like look after Emmett. No, I'm going to go and get myself a coffee. But,
Yikes.
right, with that, we'll leave you go.
Bye 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 bye.
Should we not tell them to go follow us on stuff, Nikki? No?
Follow us on Instagram at Goodreads and
Storygraph?
I guess Twitter. I guess.
I would tweet. I love how, like, we should
It's
both be
basically,
tweeting.
yeah, it's basically that is Becca's Twitter.
It's not. I try to include, like, book stuff on it, but, like,
Yeah, but you do,
the
that's
thing is,
your
though.
primary Twitter account.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But can I just say, we both have the login for all the social
Yeah, but I
medias.
can't. I need to do more on Instagram and I need to update Goodreads and Storygraph, but Twitter,
See, what I do is you have, Nikki has a thread on her own personal Twitter
I
of
stopped that.
the books
I'll
that she
talk
was
about that
covering.
next week.
Okay, the books
I'll
she was
talk
covering, and
about
I thought it was great because I was like, I can update our Goodreads.
that.
I will do this job for her, and now she stopped, and I'm like,
I know. I realized tracking your books can put you under pressure to read, and that's not the vibe that I'm here for.
oh yeah, no, I don't do that. I'm
Yeah.
like, I track it on my own like Storygraph so that like I have a record of the books I read. I have my own goal. I'm being a lot more realistic than I was last year. And do you know what? I'm just enjoying it. I'm trying to enjoy it. That's the thing.
Good.
Reading, let okay. Oh my God, we're gonna be going over, but reading is for an enjoyment, okay?
Reading is for fun and
Exactly.
studying.
let's not do
friends
studying
we
right
love
now.
you. We're gonna stop.
We're gonna stop because we're tired and we're gonna go on rambles. Well, I'm gonna go
bye,
on rambles.
Bye 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 bye
bye
bye bye.